Yo, man, you there?
Blog Talk Radio.
Some people try to pick up girls, get called an asshole. This never happened to Pablo Picasso. Why, he could walk down the street, girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole.
There, buddy.
Well, I do. Yep. Now the girls turn the color of an avocado. When he drives down the street in his Eldorado, why he was only 5'3", girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. That's New York. Girls get called an asshole. This did not happen to Pablo Picasso. Why? He could walk down the street. Girls could not resist his stare.
Not be serious.
Subsequently, Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole.
Nope. I can't do anything about that. Kidding me. I'm going to try to get in through another browser, which seemed to be working. But I got to get the old passcode. Oh, my God. You there, bro?
Yes.
All right, man. I'm sorry about that. Tell Flash to hang in there. Google Chrome for some reason doesn't want to. I mean, can you pull up the studio by the
chance? I just did, actually.
Oh, you're in it?
Yeah.
Did he call in?
I don't know if he's here or not.
Tell him to call in, because I can't get the
mic. He is. I don't know if he can speak or not. I don't know if I'm unmuted him or not.
Oh. You didn't or you did? You can, though. Right. Try to unmute him while I'm trying to get in through this other browser here. Unfriggin' believable. So studio worked for you.
Yeah.
It came up for you. Do you see his name, his phone number up there?
Oh, now he's gone.
Tell him to call back. Let's see. Because I can't get it anyway.
I think he's calling back in.
That'd be great if you can get him on there. That's all we need.
There he is.
Yo, man. Flasher. Yo, Flash, you there, bro?
How do I unmute somebody?
It's the microphone thing. If it's red, you hit the or clutch. Or,
oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
Try that.
Flash.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, at least we can get this thing finished. This fucking sucks, dude. I mean, I don't know why they just arbitrarily, huh?
I hear Matt go.
What's that?
How do I unmute? I hear Matt go. How do I unmute somebody?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
how do I do this, Sonny? I don't understand.
On the bright side,
yeah.
It was a decent. It was at least a good cutoff point because we can start over by doing our top 10 down, right? So anyone hearing this?
How do I do
abruptly,
a top 10?
How do I do it? What do I write?
Yeah. I fucking hate me, George. Sure, we took our sweet time.
Yeah,
but
that's what I was saying. I filibustered a lot.
No, we all did. That's what we're supposed to do. But you know what? I'm getting rid of him anyway. But I need to call him or contact him and say, look, why the fuck you just drop the call? Let it go to the last hour or don't. But we've been the whole 3 hours before. Okay,
yeah.
That extra hour, you guys just
it's very
just
it's
cut
very
the,
sporadic.
You know?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you can't really count on, that's the only problem, you can't count on extra innings, but we got plenty of time now, at least get this done, and we'll quit when we get it done. But, well, because we should spend more time on it. I like doing that. I guess we'll have to do two-parters from now on, I guess.
Two-parters.
There you go, two-parters.
Just league style.
In this new season, welcome everyone to Clobbering Time 646 part due, or the half, or whatever you want to call it. Here in Clobber Time Season 10. When we last left the Clobber Time game, we had counted down our top Previously on Clobber, on a very special episode of Clobber Time.
Yeah.
We've counted down our top 25 to our top to a number 25 to 11 of our favorite sci-fi fantasy TV movie characters. Huh? All right? And then BTR decided to be a buck-ass. And fuck their asses off and fuck their motherfucking fuckholes. But
previously on BTR. Flash was about to be molested by Gordon Jump in the back of a bicycle car.
As God is his witness, they both thought turkeys could fly. Well, here we go, folks. We're going to just start all over again.
Previously on BTR,
we
fucked you over yet again.
Yeah, BTR. Fucking are. At least they let me program this one.
Yeah.
You know, and then they won't let you get to the fucking now maybe the page will load for the studio. Let's see here. Fucking idiot. God damn it, man. They really suck. Now I got the studio. Alright, well, anyone who's still with us out there. And again, if you're not, hey, if you hear this later on the feeds, I hope, you know, I have no way of telling people on that last episode that we'll have the other 10, but I guess they'll figure it out and find it.
Yeah,
I'll try to do whatever I can to steer people this way. In the meantime, we will get on with it, the top 10, and now we got even more time since, you know, I just scheduled it for a little bit longer just in case, but we don't have to take up the whole 90 minutes. We can just get a job, get it done, and get out of here.
Yep.
Because it is late. We're going to start now, again, top 10 all-time favorite sci-fi fantasy movie TV characters for Matt. Number 10, Matt, go.
Darth Vader.
Yeah. I love it.
So, we talked about him in the prior in the last episode, you might remember, we talked about Darth Vader. And Yeah, Vader. You get it. Like, this guy walks in, he's got the music, he's got the John Williams music backing him up, and you immediately buy in that this guy is for real. Like, this is the guy you got to worry about. All the little dumb, you know, stormtroopers who come in and pew pew, you know, fine. But when this guy walks in with his cape and his, you know, black, he's all dressed in black and the scary, frightening helmet, you know, it's like, okay, this is the guy you have to worry about. And, yeah, like I said in the last one, I loved the scene in Jedi where, you know, you're watching him sort of do his own little, you know, thought process behind letting Luke through with the old Imperial code. So, yeah, one of the best. Vader.
Love him. And again, he was on my list earlier, and hey, who knows? Number 10, Flasher. Yo. Still with us, Flash?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Number 10, buddy.
I left it in the back of the bicycle right. shop. number 10 was Ben Kenobi.
Oh, that's right. Did we
like
do number 10 already?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were 8, I think.
Right. No. No, we didn't do mine. Yeah, we did. Okay, we'll just start at 10 anyway. But yeah, you're right. We did. So, okay, go ahead. I forgot about number 10. Go ahead.
As I said previously on Father and Time.
We did. We got to our 9.
Got to
my number
8, which was Ripley. Yeah.
Okay.
And,
well, go ahead. If
yeah.
You want,
so
you want to say more about him.
When. No, because then I feel dumb because I already said it. Basically, when we're introduced to him in A New Hope, he's kind of our link to the past. There's some exposition, you know, we're told about the Jedi and the Force and the Clone Wars and things like that. And then he's, like, killed off in one of the most shocking moments ever. I remember, you know, the first time I saw him, I'm like, oh, my God, they just killed Ben. But after his death, that's when we learn much more about the character, that he essentially gave up his life to go into hiding and to make sure that Luke was protected, because they knew that that Luke was their last hope to overthrow the Empire. So yeah, just a great character. And I'm with Matt. If they would ever announce like a Kenobi solo movie, oh man, I'd be so excited.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be so excited.
It's in talks.
Just get Ewan back, and you're all set.
It's in talks.
It's like Boba Fett to me. I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I'm sitting in that theater waiting.
Well, if this stupid 5-foot solo movie pays off for them, then it's definitely in the work. It'd be one that they said they're going to do. So,
well, here's the thing: if I see a Yoda movie before I see an Obi-Wan movie, somebody's going to pick. That's all I got to say.
I don't blame you one bit. I like Yoda, but I mean,
yeah,
I
do
yeah,
too.
I'm with you there.
His own movie and.
You know, they did a great book called Kenobi. Now it's of course no longer in the canon.
Oh, yeah.
Canon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a big fan of audiobooks. And the guy who reads it is so good, you would think it was Ewan McGregor reading this thing. And it chronicles him going to Tatooine and starting his new life on Tatooine early on when Luke is a baby. It's really good. It's so entertaining listening to the audio of that. It's like if they make the movie, I would want it to be like that.
Yeah, I think it'd have to be that. I think if you're doing the Obi-Wan movie, it would have to be him on Tatooine prior to A New Hope. That's
yeah, you familiar with that story? Cause that was really good.
I have not read it, but
I haven't read it, but technically I've read it since I listened to the audio. It was really good. It's on a bridge. So, I like audiobooks, but I like regular books too. Let's see here. Now, 9... We could just skim through those, the 9, because I think we all did those as well. I've forgotten where we were left off, so just do our 9s real quick. 9, Flash was. I mean, I'm sorry. You just did. I got to do my 10 was Han Solo.
Yeah.
So I love him, and that's all recorded on the other broadcast, so we're fine. Mine, our number 9 is also recorded on there, so we can do it brief if you want. Start with your 9, Matt.
Yeah, it was Obi-Wan Kenobi. It was his
10th.
Right
close to
For all the same reasons, yeah. I love him. I think both the actors who played him, McGinnis and Ewan, are just amazing, and you totally buy Ewan as the young version of the Alec Guinness character in the prequels. He's easily the best part of the prequels, even though I like the prequels more than most people. He's clearly the best part of the prequel. Yeah, Obi-Wan, just the man, dude. Want that Solo movie.
Well, it could happen. You never know. Well, 9 for you, Flash, was?
Was Tom Noonien Singh.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay. And you spoke very well on him. Unless you have anything to add, of course, we could take it.
Don't think so.
Gotcha. Okay. My name was Lieutenant Commander Montgomery Scott, Chief Engineer of the USS Enterprise, and I finished up myself on him pretty good. You know, gotta love the Scotty man. So, number 8, Matt.
Was Ellen Ripley from Alien.
Okay, that's right.
I pretty much said everything I wanted to say about her. Love her. She's just the best part of the Alien franchise, and I stand by that. As much as the movie needs the alien in that movie, it needs
yes.
Ripley just as well. So, two things that movie really, the two strongest parts of that movie just make it work so well. That's why it's so good. So, yeah, I love Ripley. 8. My 8. And I think that's where we got cut off, yeah?
Yes, that'll pick up from where we left off. Flash, your number 8.
My number 8, we've heard from him before. He just happens to be higher on my list. It's Jonathan Archer.
Mm.
Oh,
whoa.
Girl, nice, man. Love it. Go
yeah. You know, I'm okay. We had Kirk's immediate predecessor, as far as, you know, the Star Trek series, was Picard. Very, very different. Very different kind of captain. Sisko and Janeway. Very, very different kind of captain. Now, here comes Archer, who, while not a copy of Kirk, was more in line with that era of Star Trek.
Agreed.
That time in Star Trek history, it seems like, you know, like the way Starfleet conducted their business changed after Kirk's era. You know, the settings and the captains were very, very different. And Archer is very different from Kirk. He is very different. They were clearly not the same character. But they obviously operate within the same timeline when things were much different then and tensions were higher with the Klingons and much more dangerous time, I think. Much more dangerous than Archer's time than Kirk's time. And you talked about it earlier. I liked him because he was very decisive, and you could almost like feel that kind of pioneer kind of feel on the show that they were going for. They did pull that off very successfully.
Absolutely.
They did. I mean, they really did nail that throughout the whole show. That the beginnings of deep space exploration, and Archer, while very decisive, was also very inexperienced. We hadn't gone out this far before. So he had, you know, of course, made mistakes. But decisive, yet made mistakes. And sometimes made hard choices. The original Star Trek was a very different kind of show. And the hard choices Kirk made were nowhere near as harsh as the hard choices Archer had to make. And it made for a very interesting captain. Not that he was cold or unfeeling, but this was a dangerous place they were in right now, and he was going to have to make some really hard choices. And it made the character really interesting. So, yeah, Jonathan Archer is my number 8.
Man,
mm-hmm.
I'm glad he got back on again because he deserves it. He's so underrated, and so many people don't see the things that you and the three of us see about the character and about the show. It's just, I've never understood.
Yeah.
The antipathy.
There's a lot of,
I
don't know. I don't get it.
Strange. I don't get it. Glad I don't. My number 8 is, again, this is going to be one of those that nobody really, well, a lot of people know, but you guys wouldn't be familiar with. And that is Arnold J., as in Judas, Judas Rimmer, from Red Dwarf. Similarly sort of to the Doctor on Voyager, he's a hologram. But what's different on Red Dwarf about the holograms is in the original episode, the very first episode, it's a big Jupiter mining ship. It's like bigger than – it's an unbelievably big ship. It's a mining ship, though, in the 23rd century. Comedy science fiction series. I'm sure you've heard of it. You've probably heard of it at least.
Yeah.
Everybody on the ship dies but Lister, and he has this really annoying asshole prick, like Frank, almost Frank Burns type of a stickler for fuddy-duddy type of a roommate named Arnold Judas Rimmer. Well, when everybody on the crew dies but Lister, and he gets brought back out of deep freeze for a million years when the radiation wears off, he's the only one on the ship, basic, simplest, kind of similar, without going too far into details of the premise of the series. And the ship's computer can bring back one person. You know, all the people have been saved as holograms. And that, in the 23rd century of this particular fiction, when you die, you're saved as a hologram, your mind and your thoughts and your memories and everything. But it can only generate one at a time, and it brings back the person he hates the most, this irritating asshole bunkmate Arnold Judas Rimmer, the only person on the ship that outranks him, a petty, smarmy, little bitty worm of a man, brilliantly, beautifully played by the incredible Chris Barry. And he is the slimiest thing you ever want to see, and he's so funny. He's so petty, again, so petty. And he's a hologram. He's dead. But he's still, you know, he's Rimmer. And they go through, we talk about some, we've all done this throughout the course of this show, talked about, and this is why these characters are on this list, for the most part anyway, is characters endear themselves to you because of the way they develop over time, if it's a character that's been in a lot of movies or in a long TV series, over the course of the now like 12 different seasons they've had of the series. We've met multiple universe versions of him, one in which like he's the baddest, coolest dude ever in the universe, but in our universe, the regular series, he's the saddest, most pathetic. I can't even go into how pathetic and ridiculous this creature is. So beautifully, brilliantly played. He's the reason why, one of the biggest reasons. They're all really good, a great cast. He's probably the biggest reason why Red Dwarf is such a brilliant show. Arnold Judas, yes, his middle name is Judas. He runs, tells everybody it's Jonathan, but it's Judas. Arnold Judas Rimmer, and his biggest accomplishment is his bronze swimming certificate. That's how pathetic he is. And he sews labels in his underwear. And he's an absolute idiot. And he's so brilliantly played that I love this character so much. So someone had, I put, he's the weirdest character on my list, I guess. I don't have too many off the wall ones, but it's Rimmer. So number seven, Matt.
Is number seven for me is Fox Mulder from The X-Files.
Oh, I knew he'd get up there somewhere.
God damn it.
Oh, come on, Flash, I'm surprised.
How did you miss this one?
I expected to be on both of them.
I don't know.
No. Oh, no. Sorry. Well, go ahead and...
I wanted to miss.
Go ahead and run him through the ring, you know, make him sad.
He knows about Fox Mulder. He can pitch in.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. We'll do it together. Mulder, dude, so good. I mean, this is all really thanks to Duchovny, who just, throughout seven seasons, or was it six or seven that he was on, and then he left? I think it was seven, right? Was he at the end
something
of seven?
Like that, yeah,
like seven seasons, yeah.
I think it was the end of seven, yeah. For seven seasons on that show, just crafted this character, just did all these little things with this character that the best actors do, which is finding little things about him that maybe the audience and the viewers don't notice, and just sort of tucking that away in your own little personal bank and then using that later at a certain point. That's what Duchovny's so good at, is just finding little parts of the character and just weaving them in and out of each performance. And the character's written just so perfectly. He's this sort of... He gives the speech in the X-Files movie, Fight the Future, about being called Spooky Mulder.
Yeah.
Because he was always, you know, seeing the skies falling, alien, you know, these aliens are coming, they're coming to get us, and he's the only one who buys in completely. Even, you know, Scully, the constant skeptic, always giving him side eye throughout the show, always giving him like, you know, all right, you know. Every time he would say, well, I think it's this, she would always give him that, okay, all right, we know what you're going to say on this. He has such a great dynamic with Scully. The chemistry that Duchovny had with Gillian Anderson is just off the charts good. Love him in the series, love him in the movie. He's just awesome. I just love Mulder. So that's my pick at number 7.
Excellent. Well, Flash, anything to add to that since you didn't have him on yours?
Not only did I not have him on there, but yeah, Matt kind of summed it up perfectly. Yeah. Damn it. How did that happen?
I don't know how that was missed. I thought that would be like one of the first ones you'd write.
And I'm not
how
even saying this to be an
happen?
A-hole. I expected him on your list.
Yeah, I expected him to be higher than I had him, actually.
Yeah.
How
sorry,
that
man. Well, that's what, look, hey, I don't know, man. It's tough to remember
how
everything. We're both getting old. I wrote down
How do I have Commander Krug on here and not Fox Mulder?
Well, if you want, go ahead and you can change it now. You can change him out if you
change
want.
Change it now. Number 7 is Mulder.
No, it's too late now.
You can retroactively make him whatever number Krug was.
The moment is gone.
Yeah, you can put him on there.
Well, I'm going to make him number 13.
Well, he's 13 now.
I don't
want
to play anymore.
Flash loves Fox, so Fox is number 13 on
number 13.
Oh,
on his
canon
now.
James.
Well, come on now. Oh man, hey, remember how I felt when you had Dr. Loveless and I totally forgot him?
Dude,
Fox.
That was so funny.
Oh, I wanted to kill myself. I'm like, motherfucker. Look, I've changed up. Dude, I must have wrote down about 100 characters because I'm like, oh my god, there's so many on here.
Have you ever in one of these lists heard somebody say something at, say, number 18 and then put it on in secret?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure I wasn't the only
totally
one.
You want to know something? When I did tonight, when I did a little while ago, when I did, when I did Galen, I'd forgot him. I love Galen like you love Fox Mulder.
Right.
Then you did fucking Flash. You did
Caesar.
Cornelius or whatever. Or Caesar. And so I'm
right.
Like, oh, fuck, I forgot to forget Galen. God damn it. So I took Obi-Wan off at 14 and put Galen. I think it was Obi-Wan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love Obi-Wan, but I'm like, you know what? I love Galen more. And I know my buddies will have Obi-Wan on there.
Yeah.
So I cheated. I've admitted it again. We fucked with
him.
Yeah, all right.
I was just making sure I wasn't the only one.
No, I've done it plenty of times.
Just clarifying.
Fuck yeah, man. My number 7 is Dr. Leonard McCoy. Star Trek. I think you know of it. I really, really, really thought about cheating and just doing them as I've always said, the triumvirate.
Right.
Just doing Kirk, Spock, McCoy together because in a sense they are one character. But I don't know. I didn't want to shortchange them. It would have helped condense the list. But I'm going to go ahead and have good old Dr. McCoy, Bones McCoy at number 7. What more can you say? Wonderfully played by the just terrific DeForest Kelly. The rock, the rock solid, the emotional heart of the Star Trek ship, of the Star Trek series, the Starship Enterprise. He's Bones. What more can you say? He's Bones, and he's right there, just the emotional heart of the triumvirate. Right there, the heart, the emotions of, you know, he's the emotions of Kirk and Spock. He's the conscience. He's the conscience of the Kirk, Spock, McCoy triumvirate. Love, love, love Leonard Bones McCoy. Mm-hmm. All right, number 6, Matt.
Number 6 is Vicious from Cowboy Bebop.
Whoa.
The
I don't know.
He's the villain of the. He's the sort of antagonist. The best part about Vicious, he's akin to a Dr. Loveless or what's the guy from Hawaii Five-0?
Wofat.
Yeah, he's like that. He over 26 episodes. I can count how many he's in on one hand.
Wow.
That's how sparingly he's used, and when he does show up, it matters. It's important when Vicious shows up.
Wow.
You know, because we first start sort of learning about him in the very first episode. There's a whole flashback to Spike's previous life, but it's all very mysterious, and Vicious is in there. And you're like, who's this guy? And, you know, is he on Spike's side? Is he not on Spike's side? Come to find out in a later episode he first appears in, called Ballad of Fallen Angels. And the entrance he has in that episode is unreal. It's insane. It's one of the best. It's Vader level entrance.
Wow.
Like, holy cow, you know? Yeah, so Vicious, he's used sparingly, but it's important when he shows up. And when he shows up, it's about to get serious. Because every time Vicious shows up, you know that means we're about to hear more about Spike, or we're about to hear more about his whole past deal with Vicious and the Red Dragons and the council and all the stuff from the past. So, great villain, great voice. The voice is just unreal. Don't remember off the top of my head the gentleman who did it, but he's insanely talented as Vicious. So, yeah, Vicious.
Nice. Wow, excellent. Number six, Flash.
My number six is Captain Jean-Luc Picard. Believe it or not.
Whoa! I'm
yeah.
blown away. I bumped him from my list, but I like him. I almost put him on there, and I was thinking I was gonna take heat from Tex over it, and you got him that high. Wow.
Yeah, I got him that high. Got him
that
high.
Well, I mean, look, he's. I don't blame you. He's great. I love Picard.
He was out of a show that I liked but never loved.
Right.
He was the one constant, the one consistent factor that would draw me back into the show time and time again. While the other show, while there were some other characters that I thought were interesting, he was the focus of so many good episodes. If you would say, hey, give me your top 10 Next Generation episodes, probably nine of those, or at least nine, are going to focus on that character. Very, very complex character. A lot of people give him an unfair rap, saying he's a diplomat, and you know he's a wuss, and he's this and he's that. He's just a different kind of captain.
I used to do that.
Has a different, very different command style. But the thing about Picard, not to get too sappy here, the one word that would best describe him is nobility. He's very, very unwavering. He has a very, very set code of ethics. He's very much, you know, he's compassionate without being wimpy. Strong without being overbearing. So he's just a perfectly written character. And, man, I'm telling you what, Patrick Stewart has turned in some amazing performances in that role. I mean, just incredible stuff. So, yeah, Jean-Luc Picard is my number six, and quite frankly, I'm surprised that he did end up that high, but I just kept bumping him up.
Wow.
So, yeah, number six.
I'm surprised, but I feel better now because I bumped him, and I'm mad at myself for having to bump him, but I like Archer a little bit more, but Picard probably is a better character, to be honest, because Picard, first of all, you want to see a dude act his ass off.
Yeah.
Watch just about any number of Picard scenes.
Yeah.
How brilliant he is in so many ways. Where he's just, I love, this sounds weird. This is going to be sort of like when Matt's talking about Bob Ross. But so, like, there's a thing where you got the bombast of a, you know, Sisko's a pretty bombastic dude. You like to make fun of the way he talks. Picard's like this soothing guy. You go into the captain's ready room, unless he gets pissed off and gets stuff too. But
yeah.
Like, talking like this a lot, and he's talking about this real even keel with that voice. And he'll just go into a Shakespeare quote or do something like that. And he's talking very rationally, very cold. Again, he speaks very he's just so good at being very even keel and stuff, being very calm, calming matter. He could certainly get angry and be pissy about things sometimes. But when he gets going, one of many great examples I love is when he has to prove that Data has rights.
Oh, yeah.
Trial. Remember, Data's on trial. A really good episode called "The Measure of a Man."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I just love when he's in. You know, when he's the guy who's putting Data on trial, he's asking him questions like, you know, philosophical questions. He goes, you know, about sentience and things like that. But eventually he just goes into full-on passion mode, and he goes, "The very mission of our ship is of the Federation is to seek out new life." And he points to Data. He says, "Well, there it sits."
Yeah.
God, he's just sells everything. What's that?
This is also a guy who did not have it really that easy over the course of his show.
He gets taken
by this, you know, vicious alien robot race known as the Borg, gets turned into one of them. As a result of that, suffers with all kinds of like PTSD later. There's a whole movie, a 2-hour movie devoted to an episode. Wrath of Khan did that, I guess, too. But there's a whole movie dedicated to the aftermath of a 2-part episode of that show, Best of Both Worlds. And it's my personal favorite Star Trek movie ever, the First Contact. And he goes through a huge deal in First Contact. He's right from the start, he's dealing with the effects of what happened in the TV episode. He's awesome.
When he's turning into Ahab, in that scene with Alfre Woodard, he pisses off Worf. I mean, that scene alone, man, it's so intense.
And then it all comes back because he goes to talk to Worf and he says, you know, frankly, Mr.
the bravest
Worf.
Man. Yeah. You're the bravest man I've ever known.
So good.
I mean, when he's like, and I will make them pay for what they've done. I mean, good God, it's just
vengeance.
Killed you. God, it was beautiful. He's actually great as Professor X, even in the movie stuff.
Yeah.
Perfect. But the guy just, you want to see a dude act his goddamn ass off. It's bad. Any episode of Next Generation, you'll get a great scene. Another favorite scene is when he's explaining to these alien beings that think he's a god who watches the Watchers, I think the episode was.
Oh, yeah.
When they think he's the Picard, they're calling him, and he has to explain to these beings why we're not gods. We're just people with higher technology and stuff. The compassion this guy has, that he's the soul of a poet, all that kind of stuff. Really great. So, I'm glad you had him on there.
Did not expect that at all.
Didn't expect it, buddy. What are we at, 6?
Six,
right? Okay. My number 6 is Indiana Jones, as played by Harrison Ford in the films. I like Han Solo, but I love the character of Indiana Jones. I like him even as young Indy on the old show by Sean Patrick Flannery, but of course in a couple of my favorite films of all time, Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think the unfairly maligned Indiana Jones of the Temple of Doom and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and even the lousy, stupid Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Numbskull. I just love the character of Dr. Henry Jones Jr. And I think he really is a character, he's great. I mean, he's great in the first two movies, and I love him in it. And I think what really, really knocks it out of the park for him as a character was to be brought down a peg when he spent a whole movie running around with his father, played by Sean Connery in The Last Crusade. The way those two bounce off of each other, and the way he's this badass Indiana Jones in the first two movies, he's really fun. I like him. But he becomes so much more of a character in that film, which I don't think is as good as Raiders, but I think the characterization and the banter between and interplay between Jones, the senior and the junior, between Sean Connery. What a great role for Connery, too. For once, he's not the bad guy. He's the Nevis. He's the bookworm. That's way off base, which is a lot of fun. But Ford plays him brilliantly, plays him beautifully. And again, there's an academic there who happens to be this. We learn all these things about this character in his growing up days on the Young Indy show, and he's just love him. I even love the character version of the old man who played him in the introductory spots of the old series, which got taken away by George Lucas because he's a dick. So all that Young Indy, movie Indy, old Indy, I love them all. I just love this character. So, and. Yeah, was that a big surprise to be on there? It's still science fiction fantasy to me. It's fantasy, so.
I forgot about him, actually. I didn't even think of him, but yeah.
Love me some Indy.
Yeah.
So
there are
number
definitely science fiction aspects to it. I mean,
it
definitely counts, yeah.
And fantasy, I wouldn't put him on there.
Yeah.
All right, number five, Flash Oler. Five, Matt. Go.
Another Matrix character, Agent Smith.
Oh.
This guy, dude, so cool. He starts this first. I've talked about this a lot with characters. You'll notice the characters that I like, the one that I talk about with the most passion, they tend to have a journey that they go on throughout the entirety of their time on screen. And Smith goes on a journey. He goes on a total path from Matrix 1 to Revolutions. And he starts the movie as somebody who feels like a prisoner of this system. Even he has this scene with Morpheus where he's interrogating him and saying, I got to get out of this zoo, this prison that has been created. It's driving me batty. A machine is saying this. A computer program is tired of being a computer program. It's tired of being an agent of a system because it feels like it's just as much of a prisoner as the people it hunts down. And he gets sort of defeated by Neo at the end of the first movie. And in the second movie, in the third movie, he becomes this virus. He just starts infecting everything. And in fact, it's such a fantastic callback because in the first movie, he tells Morpheus, humans, they just go and they multiply in one area and then they go to the next area and they multiply again and they just keep spreading across this planet and taking it. And in Reloaded Revolutions, he starts doing exactly that. He's just spreading. He's just this virus. And by the end of the movie, by the end of the trilogy, he cannot fathom humanity. He still, even though he spent so much time with humanity, still cannot fathom humanity. He still cannot fathom how Neo can just keep getting up and getting up and getting up.
Wow,
and that's
insane
to him. He's like, why are you still getting up? You can't win. You cannot win. And all Neo has to say is, because I choose to. And he still doesn't get it, even after that. So this is a guy who is just played unbelievable by Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving, incredible, yeah. Great character.
Just a phenomenal actor, a phenomenal character, Agent Smith, at number five for me.
Excellent. Mr. Anderson.
Didn't forget
that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Five, Flasher.
Number five is my biggest cheat of the night. Probably the biggest cheat I've ever done.
You ready to call the cheat police?
Call the cheat police.
But it's a total cheat. But if we're going to be honest about these lists, like if you're talking favorite. I'm going to make an honest list. It's got to show up on here. And it has very little to do with anything else on this list. And number five is the Frankenstein monster, and I'll tell you why.
Nice.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nice.
The novel itself is my favorite novel of all time. Matt and I were talking about this earlier. If Frankenstein and Dracula had not been adapted into film, the novels would still be here, but they wouldn't have the same cultural relevance as they do. They would still be considered great pieces of literature, but they would not necessarily be part of pop culture. So it took film to push these characters into the mainstream. And I'm not even necessarily going to like assign it to one actor or one movie because there are aspects of a lot of them I like. I love Karloff's monster, even though it's completely unfaithful. It's completely unfaithful to the novel.
You took
the germ of it, and that was it. But I love that look. I love Karloff's performance. Unfaithful as hell. And then you'll go to more faithful versions, like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is very... pretty much faithful, till it gets to the end and it takes kind of a right turn. But then you've got De Niro playing a much more faithful version of the monster. And then you've got, like, the schlocky ones that are out there. a lot of the universal ones, I think. But it's the character itself that made me put it on the list because the novel centers around this creature, and it's there's so many things wrapped up into this character, so many themes wrapped up into it: parental responsibility, scientific responsibility, anger. You know, it's everything there. You can do a million things with this character. That's how malleable he is, and you can put him in any situation. But there's so many themes out of that novel that I'm just drawn to that novel and drawn to this character. So yeah, it had to be on there. So number five is the Frankenstein monster.
What about some love for your buddy, your old buddy Svensson, Bill Svensson?
You played him. Bo, yeah. Which is, yeah.
Frankenstein, the true story. What's it called?
Whoa.
It was a 1968.
That was Michael Sarrazin.
That was Michael Sarrazin. Okay, didn't Svensson
play him? Yeah, you name it. I mean,
you're right,
everybody's
there was
played
Sarrazin.
This character. There's been so many people. Bo Svensson,
Clancy
and
Brown.
And yeah. Clancy Brown and Christopher Lee and David Prowse even did it once, and you know, tons of people have played. So.
Even Bela Lugosi played.
Bela Lugosi, exactly, who turned it down originally.
Yep, then they did it anyway. And Glenn Strange played him a lot before he became the bartender on Gunsmoke. Yeah, so. But that was in the mold of Karloff. Those guys played him. Karloff was always my favorite. But I know what you're saying for sure. Anthony Brown was pretty good, but that was he was almost like the Hulk or something. So there you go.
He even made it into comic books.
One.
Marvel even did that.
Yeah.
Monster Frankenstein.
Oh, that rights and
when all their. Yeah, when all their monsters were out on parade and all this. So yeah.
Yeah,
Frankenstein's monster
is
my number
five. Gotcha.
Quite frankly, one of the first science fiction novels. A lot of people, classify it as gothic horror, which it is. It's also a science fiction.
Yeah, but it's
novel.
Also science. Yeah, it is. One of the first. No question about. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, my number five is, I guess, the only other character other than Galen on my list that has one name, I guess. And I think again, a little obscure. I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard of him, but it's Spock from Star Trek. Yeah.
Oh, that
again,
doctor.
I think you guys. Yeah, that's right. The baby
Spock.
Doctor.
Dude, we just missed each other.
Baby doctor, right?
Yeah, baby doctor. I love Spock very much. You know, we can't. I don't know. I don't, sir. I don't think you can love Star Trek without loving Spock, and I certainly don't know how you can if you love the original series. And what can you say? He is the revolutionary character of science fiction, one of the most extraordinary characters in science fiction television history, for sure. Because, when Roddenberry put him, and he wasn't even like the first officer at that point, but when he put him in the first pilot later, when the network was haranguing him, I remember hearing it in Roddenberry's voice because he told the story on that old Star Trek, it wasn't Inside Star Trek album or whatever, Star Trek Lives album, whatever it was, when he's talking about how they're all over him about, get rid of that, get rid of the woman because. We don't buy her in command of anything. Yeah, this was early 60s. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And then on about him and this, that, and then finally said, and while you're at it, get rid of the guy with the ears. Because you had a character who basically looked like Satan.
Right.
And, in the early, early mid-60s on national television. So that wasn't going to fly. But you made it work, and what does it? Not just, of course, obviously a lot of brilliant writing by a lot of great writers, but Leonard Nimoy is and ever shall be Spock. Just, again, you don't have to go too far into it. Everyone knows how great Spock is. It's with a lot of these two characters, especially in the top 10. Spock is just Spock, man. I'm just going to go, hey. And, again, I never get tired of hearing the way Shatner says it. Spock! Or other ways. Spock! I mean, think about it for a second. That's probably the greatest name of any character in history because it's one word, it's one syllable, and it just. Spock! I like it. I love it. Kirk yells, Spock! I don't know what it is. Spock! 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 Yeah. Even the exaggerated comedic version. Spock! I just love the man. Love him. And again, greatly due to the wonderful Leonard Nimoy. Yeah. Number four, Matt.
Mr. Spock.
Whoa, you gave him two names, Mr. Spock.
Yeah, I
guess I could have put Mr. on there. He is Commander Spock, but yeah, you're right.
Dr. Spock, yep.
love him.
Yeah, I mean, you got it. It's all there. Leonard Nimoy is just the man when it comes to Star Trek. For me personally, I always thought Spock was my favorite character on that show. From the minute I first saw it till right now, he's always my favorite character on that show. It was just always about Nimoy, because Nimoy always did a phenomenal job of making this all seem believable. Because, you know, it would be easy if you're an actor on the show to just sort of, you know, push buttons and be like, blah, blah, which I feel like a lot of the new shows do, the shows afterwards. It was always just like dickheads just like blah, 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 pushing buttons. And it's like, all right. I bought it. I believe that Spock knows exactly what he's doing in all these situations.
He pushed buttons.
Fix something or do this or do that. It's always like, yeah, I totally buy. He knows exactly how this ship works, how these things work. That was always the part that I was most impressed by Spock. And it was, of course, he was the gateway to the Vulcan mythology. And yeah, just.
Yeah.
Man.
Am I crazy, dude? Or does Spock, by watching him so much, does he rub off on you in a sense that makes you want to be more analytical about things?
Yes, it does.
You love the way he approaches things. Even though a lot of shit in the whole Vulcan philosophy doesn't make a lot of sense. They're not really that logical. They do lie their asses off, and they're a bunch of hypocrites sometimes.
Yeah.
But still, forget about that for a second. The performance of Nimoy as Spock makes you want to be more logical and analytical because you've watched it. Am I crazy or just
no,
rubs
absolutely.
Off on you?
Yeah.
Love him. Wow. So we came close to a tie on that one.
Yeah, almost.
Outdid me on that one, brother. Or Flasher, unless you have something to say about Spock, of course.
We're probably going to hear from him again.
four, buddy.
Number four is Luke Skywalker.
Nice.
Oh, way up there with Luke. Like it. Okay,
way,
cool.
Way up there.
Love it.
I'll tell you why I love this character so much, and it has a lot to do with the decisions that George Lucas made. I know we all like to shit on George, but there was a time when George did know what he was doing. When we see Star Wars for the first time, we have no idea that this is not going to stay the same. Your assumption is the next sequel is just going to be more of the same with the same characters. Oh, now they're just going to be somewhere else going through pretty much the same adventure. The safe sequel is what we should have got. But what we got instead was, as you said earlier, a progression of a character through three movies. When Star Wars ends, we have no concept, no idea that Return of the Jedi is going to end with him giving his father a hero's funeral pyre. Who saw that coming? Nobody did. And the character just like changed so much over the course of these three movies. Three short movies, by the way. It's not like Luke was in, you know, 12 movies or something. Like, it was three movies. That was it. And so much happened in those three movies. And I've always said that my favorite scene in the entire Star Wars trilogy, favorite scene, is the scene I was just talking about. When he walks up to sets the logs on fire and burns this darkness away, you know, releases him, you know, burns all this evil away.
Yeah.
And he just stands there, just looking at him, and you got that music playing. And you're like, oh my God, this goes back to two aspects of A New Hope, kind of when he's looking at the binary suns, and also when he's standing in front of
Owen
and Beru's bodies. And you've got the smoke billowing, which is where his journey really begins. So the journey we see begins begins there and it ends there. It's really nicely done. A lot of people think these movies are just flop and just for kids. There's a lot there. And there's a lot there with that character.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a lot of stuff going on in these movies. You know, people dismiss them. Ah, they're kids' movies. Ah, they're kids' stuff. Well, no. Well, yeah, they are in a sense, but in a sense, they're not.
Yeah.
There's much more to them. And that's my favorite scene because that's what the entire trilogy was all about, was getting to that point. So, yeah, Luke Skywalker is my number four.
Love it. Great choice, man. Love me some Luke. And there's the thing, anyone listening, bear in mind, if a guy's at 18 or a guy's at 4 or whatever, I mean, if they're on my list, I love them. And
yeah.
I could, like I always say, I could do 50 that kill me to leave off of the list. So, yeah, Luke's wonderful. Number four for me, right? Okay. My cheat. My time to cheat. Sort of cheating. I mean, you tell me if I don't think he's cheating or not.
Cheat away.
Cheat away.
I'm just going to say, well, it's kind of weird to call him this. He's really the Doctor, but of course he's Doctor Who. So the Doctor from Doctor Who. And you can go, well, which one? No.
Oh.
He's the same being.
It's, yeah.
But there are many. Obviously, everyone has a favorite Doctor, and I'm no different. My favorite is Tom
That's
Baker, the first
cheating.
One I saw.
Yeah,
he's the same being, right? But he has been played by different actors. But my favorite thing about the series, my very favorite thing about it, and people are kind of weird about it. You know how people get about the shows they love, and it's kind of a fun thing. But there's some people who, back in the 80s, when the show was really becoming huge here in the States, and Tom Baker was the first Doctor that most anybody had seen. Unlike Great Britain, they've been seeing, you know, the first, you know, they'd seen William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton and John Pertwee, and you know, and then they've seen, you know, so a new Doctor was no big deal to them. But people over here didn't know as much about Doctor Who. So they see Tom Baker, and they didn't, you know, we've seen the reruns, and people fell in love with Tom Baker, the silly hair, the scarf, all the stuff. He's such a brilliant performance. He's so great that when we find out he's leaving the role and some young dude's going to be playing him and he's going to be totally different, a lot of people were like, well, that's bullshit. I'm never watching the show again. In America, it was like that. The old show, I mean, in Britain, it's different. And I was always like, I don't know, that's an interesting concept. He's the same being, but when he's dying, when a Time Lord is dying, or near what they quote it's their regeneration cycle, he's the same being inside, but his total physical form would change. And I guess if that happened to you in real life, people would think you're a different person. Because we're very visual beings. We see faces. We hear voices, you know. And mannerisms are different person to person. And so I always – my very favorite thing about the show is the fact that a really good actor will be cast. He'll play the show. You have a lot of good stories, good characters here and there. And then in about 2, 3, 4 years down the road, it's a ruling schedule, I guess. One will leave, and you'll get a totally new look to the show in the fact that he will change into somebody else. A new actor puts his new spin on it, his new take on it. And yet, and since they've done a great job of always casting these people, that I love that freshness about the series. That's why it can stay a little bit fresh, even though it's story-wise, it's tougher to stay fresh. And, you know, opinions vary on what's great, what's the good, the seasons are better or not, or which Doctor is better. I love the fourth Doctor, the seventh Doctor, the third, the second. I love a lot of the new guys, too. I mean, there's none of them that I now hate, maybe. I love Peter Capaldi as an actor, but I hate the way he was written, so maybe you could say that. I'm not, the show's dead to me. I don't care about what they do for what they're doing with it, but the Doctor is such a brilliant character, the intergalactic Sherlock Holmes, in a sense, who goes around in a time machine that's bigger on the inside than the outside, and having very British science fiction adventures, saving the universe from Daleks and Cybermen and all those things. But it's the character that drives it. If the character wasn't so wonderful and so brilliantly played by so many great actors, William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton, John Pertwee, Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, Matt Smith. And I stop right there. Sorry, Capaldi, you're a great actor, but the show was ruined by you. So the Doctor, Doctor Who, is my number four. Boom. Well, that was
mic drop.
Three of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I drop it, but I'm wearing it. So here we go. Number three, Matt.
Well, we heard about him earlier, Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop.
We did?
Yeah, Flash had him at the.
Flash had him on there? Okay.
I don't remember where, but he did.
Okay.
20 or
there you
so.
Go. Right. Yeah, that's right.
So.
The 8 sucks. Fine.
18.
Gotcha.
So it was a while ago since we last heard from old Spike, but love him.
Back. He's back.
He's back. Yep. He's phenomenal. Steve Blum does the voice. So the first sort of meeting we have, it's like I talked about earlier, it's very mysterious. It's like, you don't know what's quite happening. It's the thing that I love is that you're just dropped right into Spike's story, and you're dropped into the middle of it. You're not seeing the story of Spike Spiegel from birth to death. You're seeing this moment in his life because it is the most important moment in his life. Whatever period of time it is that they say the show takes place in, this is the part of his life that is the most important. This is the part that we're telling you about. Because all the stuff that came beforehand, it's just set up for what we're about to tell, the incredible story we're about to tell you for 26 episodes. So there's all this stuff. The mysterious woman Julia that we don't know much about. We get to learn a lot more about her early in this, or midway through the show, and then there's a lot with her in the last half of the show. The Red Dragon Syndicate. They're always talking about the Spike's eyes. He sees the past in one eye and the present in the other. You never get quite clear an explanation about why that is, but I think that's fine because we talked about earlier, the unknown. You can make up your own sort of assumption about where something dangerous like that might have happened. So he's just a phenomenal character. He's funny. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's incredible. He's my favorite anime character of all time. He's just the man, Spike.
Wow. Now watch, after I watch the show, I'll probably really like him, and then I'll go, damn it, I get to put him on my list.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting, this list almost had two different Spikes, because Spike from the Buffy show came close on my list. Well, James Marsters is brilliant on that show, and I hated leaving him off. He's such a good character. But anyway, we would have had two Spikes within something. Flasher, number three?
My number three is Darth Vader.
Nice.
Whoa, and way up there. All right.
Way, way, way up there. And what I'm going to say about this, pretty similar to what I said about Luke. we talked a lot about how when Vader makes his first appearance, he comes in, pure evil.
Yeah.
He is pure evil.
Yeah.
He's pure evil throughout A New Hope. He does horrible things in The Empire Strikes Back. Anyway. So, when we first see this villain, we have no idea, once again, that the story is going to end the way it did, which is the sign of a great character. This character changed so much from his first appearance to his death. And I'm going to tell you, you may relate to this. The first time I saw Return of the Jedi, and this kind of sums up why the character is so great, when he turns on the Emperor, when he makes his decision that no more, I don't want this life anymore. I'm going to start a new hero's journey here. And he grabs the Emperor and hurls him to his death. That theater erupted. There was such a reaction. I mean, people leapt to their feet. They jumped up and they cheered. And it wasn't because, Luke is safe. It was because of what Vader did. And suddenly we're rooting for this bad guy. How did that happen? How did he suddenly become the hero of the story? And there are two arguments in the Star Wars community. Who's the chosen one? Is it Luke or is it Vader? You can make the case for either one. Both of them, brought balance to the Force. Without Vader, there's no, you can get into all the philosophical, Star Wars discussions, but what a great character to change so much and so believably. It's so well done. And you get your first inkling, like Matt said, with the shuttle scene. There's so much going on in Return of the Jedi. There's so many Vader and Luke things going on there. And like when he says, it's too late for me, son, and there's just this incredible sadness about him. And it's evil in A New Hope, and it turns to sadness in Return of the Jedi. It's just the sadness about the character. So, yeah, Darth Vader is my number three.
Greatness. Love him. Love him for sure. Amazing. And he does, I think he's, the evil really reaches almost its zenith at Empire when he's killing off the, you know,
yeah,
the admirals like that.
Yeah.
They did a pretty interesting issue of the Star Wars Marvel comic, I remember, where all the admirals were getting sick of being bumped off for no reason for Vader, so they, like, set him up and tried to kill him and sabotaged him on this space station and shit like that. I'm like, yeah, I guess you're going to be pretty tired of barely the slightest screw-up and he kills you and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great character.
There's a great thing that happens in Revenge of the Sith. You know, of course, this is all after the fact. George wrote this after the fact. But one of my favorite moments in Revenge of the Sith is a sign of what's to come in Return of the Jedi. When he's trying to make that decision, when Mace Windu is battling Palpatine,
yeah,
he's like, which path do I take? Which path do I take? Do I spare the Emperor, or and that comes to play back again in Return of the Jedi. You can see him making that choice again when Luke's in that position where he's being electrocuted. You just see it, even though he's hidden behind a mask, you can't see his face. Just by just the way it's shot, you can tell it's going over and over in his head. Here's my chance. This is my chance. This is my second chance. Do I take it? Do I take this chance? Do I make it right? And I think it's. I think I love when they take his mask off. A lot of people are like, you kind of ruin it. No, because you take it off and it's just this old man in there. Just this human. For the first time, Darth Vader is human.
Discovering that underneath the terrifying helmet of Darth Vader, that Anakin Skywalker is just a sad old man who let his children down is incredible.
It is.
I think that's incredible.
Yeah. It's all an illusion. They take the mask off, and this whole Vader persona is an illusion because there are microphones.
Yeah.
You can even see the microphones that amplify his voice. Even the voice is fake. There's nothing real about it.
So good.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Greatness. Well done, boy. We really... really went hog wild on Spock and Vader. I like it.
Yeah,
really went out there. I mean, which is what you should. That's why we got the extra time.
They deserve it.
They deserve it big time. My number three, again, it's going to be, I always hate to leave you guys out in the cold, but it happens to me too. And I'm this character that you guys don't know about, but I love him beyond love. And this is Cair Avon. Yes, K-E-E-R Avon from Blake 7. Just a character that I've always had in my very top 2, 3, 4 all the time. Blake 7, as I mentioned, Raj Blake made my list earlier. The show was named after Blake. There's no question about it. But without Avon, and there are other characters too. Avon is basically, again, coming from me, who loves all of the great, clean, squeaky clean heroes. I got a lot of anti-heroes on my list. And here Avon is this electronics genius who... basically, when he first meets Blake and they steal the Liberator, all he wants to do is go make money somewhere. He was about to go to jail in the first place. He was a criminal because he tried a big bank swindle. In his philosophy, because this is not the hunky-dory Federation of Star Trek. This is the Orwellian Federation of Blake 7 that, again, has a caste system that if you don't not born in the right family, then you're just basically a nothing little peasant and you're controlled by drugs, controlled by different things and a military dictatorship. Well, Avon, all he wants is to make more money. And he tells Blake, who's all pie in the sky, all revolutionary and all, altruistic, saying he's not going to stop until free men can think and speak. And Avon tells him he's not. He says wealth is the only reality. The only way to acquire wealth is to take it away from someone else. He's that cold, he's that calculating, and you get a course earlier, but played by the brilliant Paul Darrow, that this is a guy that just soon shoot you as look at you, and you start thinking early on that he hates Blake, but when he gets aboard this incredible alien starship, the Liberator, that he sees potential. He sees that this ship, there are treasures and gold aboard it and all this stuff. All he wants to do is take it and go make money, but Blake and the rest of the crew, Blake manipulates everybody because he's a master manipulator. He's manipulating these criminals into go fight a war against an entire federation that he can't win even with this powerful starship. And all Avon wants to do is go make money. So but he tags along with Blake and lets Blake use his skills, his brilliance, because he knows sometime he's going to get his chance to steal the Liberator and dump Blake's ass. And he almost does it a couple of times. He is not Mr. Nice Guy. God, this character, Paul Darrow plays this character to perfection. I mean, he's got this great British snarl to the way he talks and this sly humor. And he hates Blake's guts. He hates heroes. He says, I have never had a use for heroes. Blake is a pansy or a patsy and a dumbass for believing that there's anything good in the universe and despise it. And yet, as the show goes on, you know, when Blake leaves, the character of Blake leaves after the second season, it becomes Avon's show. And he starts to use the Liberator for his own ends, but then he also starts doing some of the shit Blake was doing, and he can't understand, why am I doing this? I'm not a revolutionary, but yet he starts doing a lot of the same things, anti-Federation things, which the Federation is almost wiped out by an alien fleet. But he starts, is he becoming Blake? And we wonder, does he hate him? Does he hate Blake's guts? He keeps, for a guy who hates him, he sure goes looking for him a lot. And he starts, I think deep down we realize that this character loves Blake, so maybe actually loves Blake because he shows him that there's good in the universe. And yet, that's a fallacy too, because in the fourth season, it's so fascinating to watch the character of Cair Avon. Avon is what he's called. They rarely use his first name. Go through a transformation. Episode after episode, he's becoming more paranoid. They call him a paranoid. More hard to understand and more sinister. He actually seems to be walking a line. Is he becoming evil? Well, again, not to blow it to everyone, spoilers, no one's ever going to watch it anyway. The very last episode was one of the highest rated shows in Britain's history. And Blake comes back in the last one. You think, wow, Avon has been looking for him all this time. He really really loves him. He's really glad to find him. He's gone to all this trouble to find him. And then he fucking kills him in the last scene, blows him away, blows a hole in him. And you're like, all this time, you think he's looked for Blake. You think he really loved him deep down. And as soon as someone tells him, hey, Blake betrayed you, he don't even listen to reason. He just blasts him in the gut in the bloody scene. And the show ended in the most depressing way it could, and yet it was brilliant. It's the most depressing thing I've ever seen, and I can watch that episode over and over. It's an attitude adjustment to me. That show gets me in a good mood, and that episode, I watch it to get myself in a good mood, and it's the most depressing shit ending you're ever going to see. Explain that to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And, you know, Garrett Thomas wanted to kill the character, and you see that and you go, wait a minute, it's all over. Because the last scene, you hear a bunch of gunshots, and the screen goes dead, and, like, everybody's dead. All this led to nothing. Just because you shoot Blake, we thought you wanted to save Blake. And, again, it's ingenious stuff. Okay, I've gone off enough about it. Anyone who's never seen Blake 7, Cair Avon is wonderful. And Paul Darrow was brilliant. Okay, I do. Oh. Great show. Number two, Matt.
We've heard from him before. Luke Skywalker.
Whoa! More Luke love. I love it.
Yeah,
another three,
man.
Another three for, well, I don't blame you one bit.
And it is all, like I think you said, Mike, all thanks to a lot of it. Thanks to Mark Hamill. He just carries Luke. I mean, he just, you know, because we begin with him and he's, you know, he's kind of naive. He has all these ambitions about, I'm going to take on, you know, and he's foolishly like a child saying, I'm going to take on the Empire by myself. Like, I would do it all. I'll just take on the whole Empire. And he's sort of, you know, guided, you know, by a sort of, you know, a hand by Obi-Wan, who sort of kind of goads him into some things. You know, he's like, looks like, well, yeah, I can get all the way to Anchorhead, and you know, I can get you to, you know, this, you know, however far you can go. And Obi-Wan's like, well, you have to do what you think is right. So he's sort of, you know, guiding him and sort of nudging him in a sort of guilt of parent kind of way. You know, kind of a guilty grandfather way, like, well, you know, if you got to do what you think is right, but okay. So he kind of pushes him in his own way. And, the journey, we talked about it a lot, the journey of Luke over the original trilogy is just insane, what they do with him. And
really amazing.
I mean, he's phenomenal. I love him. I love Luke. He was always, from day one, from the first minute I saw Star Wars, always was my absolute favorite from, you know, from this movie to where we are now, he's just been the best character for me in this whole series of movies and TV shows and video games. And just, he's so important to me that there's a of the many Star Wars video games, there's one called Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, where you don't play as Luke Skywalker. You play as another character, and there's a section in this game where Luke shows up, and you get to fight alongside him. It's like Jedi Luke, he's in the black Jedi uniform.
Yeah.
And you get to fight alongside him, and I'm like, I was almost crying that I got to fight with Luke Skywalker. I'm like, I'm a friend with Luke Skywalker.
Love
right
it.
Now.
Cool.
Yeah, he's just cool. Phenomenal. I mean, Luke is just the man when it comes to Star Wars. So, yeah, Luke.
He's just, I mean, he is, you watch in those, especially when if you're a youngster seeing those films for the first time, you watched him as Luke.
You are him. I mean, you are him in that.
You are Luke. Every kid. I mean, I love Han Solo, and obviously, even though I have him higher than Luke on the list, it doesn't mean anything. Luke is more important than Han Solo.
Yeah.
So Han's important. Darth Vader's important. Everybody's important. Leia's important. But Luke is the thing. And again, it's the hero's journey, the Joseph Campbell thing. That's what it's about. It's about Luke. And he's such a great – yes, he's only – like Flash mentioned earlier, he's only in three movies. But he's still great in some of those Timothy Zahn novels. And
yeah.
He's great in a lot of other other books and comics. He's just a great character.
He really is. By the time you get to the end of Jedi, you're like, you've been on such a ride with this guy through all these different parts of his life.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, man, when you get to the end of Jedi and he has done what he has set out to do, which is, even though he didn't know this is what he wanted, what he was supposed to do at the start of this movie in A New Hope, when he finally, after all this struggle, he helps his father, he sees, you know, all the stuff that he didn't know he wanted to do or that he needed to do, and he sees the ghost of Anakin and Yoda and Obi-Wan, he is complete. He's like, I've done what I've needed to do. I'm happy now. And he goes off with Leia and everybody else, and they all have their little thing, and all the ghosts are watching it. Oh, so good.
Yes, indeed.
Very complex character, too, because he's complex
in a
way that especially in Jedi, you look at him, and Hamill plays it really well. You're like, this guy could fall to the dark side at any time.
At any minute.
He's dangerous.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's dangerous. Especially in that final duel with Vader. When he cuts Vader, you just see it. He's seconds away from it. He's just very dangerous. And it all comes back to what Owen said, whether Lucas intended this or not, when she says there's too much of his father in him, so that's what I'm afraid of.
Then
you could retroactively explain that as, he could become the worst thing the galaxy has ever known. He could become worse than Darth Vader. And that's what makes the character so interesting. He's very, he's not just a goody-goody.
It's fascinating.
You know, he uses dark force powers. I mean, he's choking Gamorrean guards. It's like, whoa, what the hell?
Yeah.
That's a dark force power. And so he's done, he could have gone either way. So that's what made the ending of Jedi very suspenseful the first time you see it. If you knew nothing about it, you're like, man, I don't even know what's going to happen here. You're legitimately concerned. Is he going to die? Is he going to turn? Because this whole trilogy has been unpredictable as hell. Who knows what's going to happen here?
Amazing. Amazing stuff. Great character. I'm glad he got even better, even more exposure from you guys. So, I love Luke. And again, he's just so... He's the most important character in all of Star Wars. He really
is.
Number two, Flash.
Number two is Mr. Spock. I say it like Matt does. Mr. Spock.
I don't know whatever came on when I just put Spock up.
Yeah.
Sign of respect. That's what we grew up with. Yeah, that's what we grew up with. Nobody called him Spock when we were growing up, right?
I guess not, but Kirk does.
Nobody called him Spock. Everybody called him Mr. Spock.
In
the fucking credits, for Christ's sake. But,
yes, it is. You can say Commander Spock.
What a great character. Oh, my God. You could do a whole show on it.
You're right.
You could do a whole show on just that character.
Yeah, dude.
And just the nuances that Nimoy brought from, I mean, Nimoy, obviously. But what makes you think, oh, to show a little bit of emotion, I'm going to raise this eyebrow a little bit. Where the hell did that come from? You know, it's those little touches. Those little touches that when he raises that eyebrow, you know what that means. It's never explained and it's never spelled out for you, right? He's never, you know, like, hey, when I do this, I mean, I'm surprised. You got it. You know, you got it just by watching it. But aside from the brilliant performance, just a great character. I know, just, you know, it belongs to two worlds. You know, he's from two worlds, but doesn't belong to either one. And it's just, you know, yeah, but a great character.
It's amazing. And all pretty much because of the great Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no question about that. He was, whoa, the fuck? That's something on my computer. I messed something up on my computer there. Is that it? Are you guys more about him? Or good?
No, I'm good.
Well, my number two is, his first name is Number. He's Number Six.
Ah.
From my favorite all-time television series, The Prisoner. It's my all-time favorite show. It's really, I mean, it kills me to have him at two instead of one, but it doesn't matter because I love him and he knows it. The great Patrick McGoohan, I should say. Not Patrick, no, let me get it right. What do you say about him? There's a lot of debate. It's the most debated to death type show ever made, pretty much. But there's a lot of debate about whether he was or was not John Drake from the show Secret Agent. As I mentioned before, probably Secret Agent, the song made my top theme songs list. Well, Patrick McGoohan had done a show for years called Danger Man, Secret Agent. It was called Danger Man over there, and it was called Secret Agent over here. Played a character named John Drake. And then when that show was adapted to go into color production for the first time, he made two episodes. Then he decided he was tired of it. He wanted to do something else. So he gets to make this brilliant show, The Prisoner, and he only wanted to make seven episodes. He got in all these fights. They wanted 26. They wanted a lot so they could syndicate. He ended up making a deal for 17. This guy did so much. Basically, the belief is his character is this secret agent who was taken at the beginning of the episode to this strange fairy tale storybook type island called The Village, where he doesn't know where it is. We never know his name. They give people numbers there. They don't have names, and for those not familiar with the show, we'll go into it other than that much. So we only know him as Number Six. But a lot of fans like to go, he's John Drake. And people even used to make up things like, well, there was an episode where they called him Drake. Well, they didn't. But a lot of people think they did because, again, he's the same actor. It would come right from that show. He was a secret agent, just like that. So he's got to be John Drake. And McGoohan always said he's not John Drake. But it's fun to pretend that he is. But he is such a wonderful character on the show. He is played similar to John Drake, except he's a little bit angry because he's been taken to this island that he doesn't like. He wants his freedom. He was resigned. And the whole thing is, they keep asking him, they want to know why he resigned. He won't tell them. And every episode is them using extremely crazy science fiction-y methods to extract why he resigned. In a show that was made as the quote-unquote, the word allegory comes to mind. That's what it was. It was an allegory. It was Kafka and all these other things people like to tie it to. Basically about freedom's show about freedom. And are we free in a free society? In a place where we imprison, in a society where we imprison people, and all those wonderful things about the show. But Number Six is, he's put into the situation. He's like this man of steel. They even call him that in one episode. So he's the ultimate secret agent put in a situation where the odds are all against him. Can he escape? Can he not? Well, the show wasn't about that. It was about how it was about him trying to keep his identity every week because they did some crazy shit to him to find out why he resigned. And don't have to go too much far into it because a lot of people know of the show, but it's my all-time favorite show, and it's mainly for a lot of reasons, but largely the great Patrick McGoohan. Not only created the show, did the music for it and all that kind of stuff, he is the show. Number Six, my number two all-time favorite character, Matthew. Here we go. We're now at the big
Uno
tamale. We're now at the hell? Sorry, I was having some issues with my damn computer here. Okay. Ooh, man, we're just coming in under the wire here. We're streaming, but maybe it won't throw us out. So let's go. Your number one, Matthew. Here we go, everyone. Number one, all-time favorite TV, movie, sci-fi, fantasy character for Matt. Go.
Well, I think this is like the fifth character from this franchise, but, you know, whatever. Is Neo from the Matrix trilogy.
Oh, okay.
And we, much like what Lucas did with Star Wars in 77, when he took the traditional hero's journey, Hero with a Thousand Faces, the monomyth by Joseph Campbell, took it and did a sort of an up, at the time in 1977, an updated, you know, version of that for Luke and the whole thing. That's exactly what the Wachowski is doing with Neo. They took the monomyth, the legend of, you know, the hero's journey, and they took that and they molded it for 1999 audience when this movie came out. And Neo goes on the gamut. He goes on the entirety of the hero's journey from Matrix 1 to the Matrix Revolutions. And throughout this whole trilogy, Neo is this messiah, he's always referred to as this messiah, this sort of prophetic, you know, bringer of change to the Matrix, the system of control. And from the first movie to the last movie, until the last set sequence in the Matrix Revolution, constantly always questioning, is this right? I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. You guys tell me all the time that I'm this messiah and all this. I don't know if that's true or not. I've been told by the Oracle in the first movie that I wasn't. Then she's like, well, I don't know, are you? And so he's always in constant question about and constant conflict about, is this right? Am I doing it right? Is this the way you're supposed to do it? And it's always in his head. Keanu Reeves plays him, and he does just an unreal job with this guy over three films. By the time you get to the third film, I talked about earlier with Agent Smith, he is still in this fight with Smith, this big, huge fight where they're throwing each other in the buildings and all this stuff. And it's just like, it's basically a Dragon Ball Z, like Superman versus General Zod throwdown. And Neo still isn't understanding at the time what he has to do, because he keeps punching and he keeps punching and punching. He's still not understanding what he has to do. Even though he's been told all these different ways to do it, he still doesn't get it. And it's when he decides to just let it all go that he finally understands how he can win and stop Smith. And it all comes at a cost. And it's by the end of Revolutions, you've suffered a lot of losses, but thankfully the world is in a good place. Rumors of all kinds of reboots and stuff. If that happens, who knows? But for all I know, for now, there's only three Matrix movies. There could be more in the future. I hope there will be. For now, there's only three Matrix movies, and Neo is, for my money, the greatest character I've ever seen in any sort of science fiction, fantasy, TV, movie, whatever you want to call it. So, Neo.
Excellent. Well, great stuff.
An anagram of one, by the way.
Mm. Oh, yeah. There you go. Well, hey, perfect. There you go, man. Yep. Wow. Well, now, again, I'm hoping we don't get cut off here because the stream's almost out. So let's go. Again, we're going to take our time unless we get cut off. I'm going to go with Flash, your all-time favorite sci-fi fantasy TV movie character. Number one, go.
I have a weird feeling we've probably got a tie here.
I do, too.
I do.
I'm assuming this. But number one is Captain James T. Kirk.
Well, strangely enough, my number one is Captain James Tiberius Kirk.
Weird.
As played by the one and only William Shatner. Say what you want about Captain Sisko, but that was perfect in Trials and Tribulations when they said his ship, Captain James T. Kirk, and Sisko said the one and only.
Yeah.
I when we started this list, I was like, this is the way it's going to end. I know it. I know this is the way this list is going to end.
Day one, I'm like, they're both going to have Jack Kirk as well.
Yes, indeed.
I know this is how it's going to end, but it's honest. You know what I mean? It wasn't designed that way. So, but, what can you say? You know, Matt will disagree, for my bet, the most iconic science fiction television character of all time. A lot of people say Mr. Spock, which is probably
iconic,
true.
Yeah.
But it's for me, it's probably Captain Kirk.
I think it's Kirk as well. I don't know if it's close. You could flip a coin on which one it is. I love them both.
It could go either way. It's definitely one of those two. It's definitely one of those two when it comes to television. Maybe not overall science fiction, but definitely as far as television goes. It's not more iconic than Star Trek, and it's certainly not more iconic than Captain Kirk. The hero's
the
hero.
Standard.
You know what I mean?
The standard by all which all space captains.
The textbook, The textbook, yeah. But, and Shatner just as big of an icon as the character he's played. But, yeah, a lot of people give him shit. But, you know, we were watching The Paradise Syndrome the other night, right? And he gets hit by the memory beam. He flails his arms up. And Matt made an interesting point. He goes, you know, a lot of people shit on Shatner for his acting, but what's he supposed to do there?
Yeah.
Right.
That was always my...
You just kind of wince like, oh, you know, my head hurts, or do you just go for it?
Look, I'm not on the Shatner love train, so I'll be honest about, you know, I'll shit on Shatner too. But, you know... People get on his case about the acting, like the shrieks that he does and like the arm flailing that he does. And I'm like, I don't know what he's supposed to do there. I don't really know. It's just, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Like, of all the things that you could throw out, I'm like, that's the one you focus on? All right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, he
weird.
Look, I'll shit on him too. Look, Shatner, I love him, but I'll knock him sometimes. And I think some of the jokes are funny. But I think people go way too far with all the bad. Calling him a bad actor is stupid.
Yeah.
Has he been silly? Can he be over the top? Can he do a lot? The guy is a great actor, I think. I mean, he can be. I mean, he's done way more that he's brilliant at than he's done that you laugh and make kind of. You can make fun of him. He's got this. I mean, he makes fun of himself, but he's a wonderful actor. The character of Kirk, though, and again, to hell with Chris Pine or anyone else whoever wants to try to play him. There's only one Kirk. And it's it. When we talk about, that's why I mostly steer clear from, characters who originate in other mediums. Characters created for whether it's the big screen or the small screen, are partially created by the actor playing them.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, you know, Gene Roddenberry and many other talented writers adding to the depth of the character of Kirk. Anybody else playing him, maybe okay, but they wouldn't be what Kirk is. Shatner, you have to put him as the larger percentage of why the character is what he is. Horatio Hornblower, aspect, all the characterization and everything. A lot of it's writing, no question about it. But we don't see that process going on. We see what's on the screen.
Well, Shatner and Kirk saved Star Trek. I mean,
Yes.
When you watch the first pilot, I'm sure Jeffrey Hunter was a very nice man, but his acting style, he's very dull. He's very, very lifeless.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's just one of those actors who just, I've got this one. I'm not saying he's a bad actor. I'm just saying he's just.
No.
He's not very energetic. He's just like, you know. Plays things a little too real, you know, a little too nonchalant for my liking. Pike is dull. Pike is a dull character. So they're like, let's scrap this. Let's start over. According to legend, Hunter's wife cost him the part, and, you know, because she was too demanding. That's the one story. So he was replaced by Shatner. So you get the second pilot, and man, there's so much energy in that now. You watch those two pilots side by side, and you're like, this one's very dull. This one's also very cerebral, which is what they complained about with the first one. Where No Man's Gone Before has a lot of heavy themes in it. You know, we're talking about God and man in here. But Shatner just brings this energy to it. And that's what was missing from the first pilot. So like, lifeless. It's so dull, and everybody's feeding off of Hunter's performance. You know, they're supposed to, you know, if he's dull, we're dull. And it's played like that old stale sci-fi where everybody talks in monotone, and it's just not good. I know there's a lot of love for that pilot. I personally don't care for it. I find it dull and not very interesting.
It's interesting
in an oddity point. From an oddity, it's interesting, but
right.
to sit there and watch it, I'm like, man, this is really dull. And that one chick in there really fucking sucks, a whole bunch of ass. She's really fucking bad. She's so awful.
Well,
and then the second pilot comes along and, you know, Shatner makes history.
He does. He does. I mean, he's just, yeah, energy's a good word because he brings an energy to the performance. You look at him, the boyish charm. The Führer sometimes. I mean, everything about this character, believe it or not, you know, it wasn't necessarily a given that I was going to go with Kirk. I mean, I almost had number six as my favorite, but I love him, and I love Avon. There have been times I've toyed with him at number, but I can't, this is a favorite list. I love the character of James T. Kirk more than any science fiction fantasy character that's ever been on television to me. Because, like you said, Spock's great. But let's face it, he was going to be on the scrap heap. Because the network didn't want him. Kirk, as Shatner, is the reason the show got the second chance it did. And people who... There were campaigns from idiot women back... and I know of a lot of them. I knew some of them from Baton Rouge, even. From around this area, that wanted the show to that wrote letter campaigns, kill Kirk and give Spock the Enterprise. And it's shitty, stupid ass.
Well, there was a rumor that Kirk died in one of those movies. I don't know, it's just a rumor.
Ugly rumor.
Huh?
Yeah, I heard there was some movie where Kirk died. You're talking about like killing off Kirk. Generations or something Yeah, Matt and I don't acknowledge that. We always say there's a rumor that there was.
I don't even know what movie you're talking about right now.
Yeah, that was crap. I put it to you this way: if I acknowledge it, then I add that the Kirk books are canon, where he got brought back.
Yeah,
you know he got brought back, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
But with this nanotechnology that healed him or whatever, and he was sent to assassinate Picard or some shit, but they became friends, and all that kind of stuff. So. I'll take that. Kirk looks pretty cool. But, yeah, look, Kirk is, I mean, he is science fiction television in a sense. Because, again, Star Trek did so much. And we don't have, thanks to Lucy and thanks to Roddenberry and all the people who did all the things to make Star Trek happen. But let's face it, William Shatner saved it. And he's just such a terrific character. Obviously, he has a great cast to bounce off of, and that helps.
Yeah, it does.
I'll tell you, one great way to sum it up was, you know, when Edith Keeler, I love that scene. I love so many scenes, but when think about it for a second. Spock is around. He's the alien. Kirk's a human. And yet Edith sees Kirk as more out of place than Spock.
Right.
And when she says, you and I both know how out of place you two are around here, and Spock says, interesting. Just where do you estimate we belong, Miss Keeler? And she says, you at his side, as if you've always been there and always will. And then she looks at Kirk, a human, says, you belong in another time, another place. I don't know when and where, you know, but like, wow. That's one of the powerful scenes in Star Trek. And, of course, there are a lot of powerful scenes in that episode. You know, when he has to let Edith Keeler die.
She must die.
She must, what? Yeah, Edith Keeler. Must die.
Yep.
You love that line, right?
Love it.
Yeah. And so, James T. Kirk, we love you, brother. And, you know, hey, he's the man. And all these characters. Neo is damn cool. I think I've seen The Matrix in a long time. You maybe want to watch that again.
They're on Hulu.
Characters from there. Are they really?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen those. I like the first one the most, really.
Yeah. For sure.
But, but the second
one.
I like
the sequels, though. I'm a defender of the sequels, I gotta be honest.
I don't like the third one, but I like the second one. And just, just action sequences alone are fun to watch. So.
Sure.
But yeah, it's fun. So no, I like them. And this was an epic because we couldn't fit. We barely fit the first nine, you know, down to nine in the first recording. And now at least we're being recorded, and we managed to finish up just over 90 minutes to do 10 through 1. So now we have an epic on our hands.
An epic two-part adventure.
Two-part adventure.
Yeah, it's Gone with the Wind, yeah.
I titled it Clobbering Time 646 and a half. I should have just made it the second episode after it. Fuck it, don't have to ask. I should change that.
Crisis.
Crisis on that. And by God, my friends, it's 2 o'clock where you guys are.
Yes.
So I'm sorry about all that, but I really appreciate that.
I'm up late anyway.
Yeah, me too. But I know Flash probably has to go to work. He's the only one of us that's going to work tomorrow.
Not too late. So I'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Man, I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, and we'll have to do it again. And everyone, I want to thank you out there who managed to find this this addendum part. And I guess since two out of three of our favorite number one character was this guy, we're going to play you out with one of his greatest speeches. Good night, everybody. I love this.
Hear me. Among my people, we carry many such words as this from many lands, many worlds. Many are equally good and are as well respected. But wherever we have gone, no words have said this thing of importance in quite this way. Look at these three words written larger than the rest, with a special pride never written before or since. Tall words proudly saying, we the people. That which you call Eid Plebnista was not written for the chiefs or the kings, for the warriors or the rich or the powerful, but for all the people. Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense,
the Canadian
promote
accent.
The general welfare,
and
yeah. Secure
tranquility.
Ourselves and our posterity to ordain and establish the Constitution. These words and the words that follow were not written only for the Yangs, but for the Kongs as well.
The Kongs.
They must apply to everyone, or they mean nothing. Do you understand?
I love it. God damn it.
Do not fully understand, one named Kirk. But the holy words will be obeyed.
Tranquility.
I swear it.
Tranquility.
Yeah, buddy. Let's lead them to enjoy their liberty while we take this treasonous shithead captain back to be hung somewhere. Damn it.
Whoa.
Well, he'll be treated fairly.
Yeah.
All right, bros. Well, thanks, man. I really enjoyed it.
Yep.
I had a fantastic time. It's fine with people are fucking us over, but we probably weren't going to fit it into we might not have fit it into the whole thing
I
anyway.
I don't know. Yeah, it could have been tricky for all
we wouldn't have. We wouldn't have because we've been going for like more than 90 minutes. More than 90 minutes.
Wait a
minute. All right, bro. Tranquility yourself.
Filibustering.
All right, bro. Well, let's talk again soon.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate
right.
it. Later.
See ya.